Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Everyone.
Hockey's here.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Thank you, Chris. That is right. It is my birthday episode of SML. I am now older than pretty much all of our listeners, I think, except Lloyd.
29 and a half. How does it feel?
Yeah, right. I am now 43.
Jesus, you're so old.
And still doing this shit.
Free video games, man. It's quite an addiction. What can I say?
Very true. Very true. But that's the subject for later on in the show. For now, as you can tell, Aki's here. Chris is here. Pernell is here. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing good. Fantastic.
Pernell's just like, good. Move on.
Good.
Come on, Pernell. How are you doing? How's things going on your end?
Adequately.
Why adequately?
Because things have happened.
What has happened?
A variety of things.
In order to try and shorten how much he talks, he's being so vague that it requires more talking. Congratulations, you've played yourself.
That's not true. I'm done. I've told you how my day's been.
Oh, man. Happened. So... yeah, let's talk. Everyone, how was everyone's weekend? Chris, how was your weekend?
Oh, pretty good. Finished up Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so now I'm actually back on the internet.
Oh.
And sure enough, I got back and I was like, wow, spoilers ahoy. I'm glad I made the perfect plan. I was like, I'm going to stick to this, this sabbatical and yeah, was not spoiled on a single thing. And got
without
through the game.
Spoilers yourself. Good time.
Yeah. Yeah. I was happy. I'm a happy customer.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Power count?
96.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. My one friend beat it in 42 hours and then complained about about it. And I was like, well, he didn't play most of it. He just, yeah, okay. But anyway, That's how one friend of mine does. She plays through games on the first weekend and then complains about them.
I mean, that's what most people do with games these days.
Yeah,
I was about to say, that's what I do all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would probably, like, having talked at length about her playthrough, if I would have done that same playthrough, I might have been disappointed too. But I'm quite happy with my the time and money spent.
Well, you got to hurry up and beat it so that you can be the first to complain about it on the internet.
I know.
Obviously.
Exactly.
Got it.
They change the character's eye color is just completely unacceptable in this day and age.
I still remember the Tifa boob thing.
The Tifa boob
Cloud,
thing.
But he's not even
I don't remember anyone ever mentioning anything about Tifa's boobs at any point since the year 1997. That just doesn't happen.
No.
That's certainly not the first, last, and only thing the entire internet is obsessed with.
Maybe someone on the complaint they shrank them or something. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's exactly that's what it was. Yeah,
her entry in the Final Fantasy Wiki, which is like the most the kind of biggest source for like obscure information, has both her Japanese and American boob measurements.
Oh my god!
So yeah, basically, the whole complaining about the breast size being smaller totally checks
literally,
out with the internet.
Literally, they put a sports bra on her. That's what everybody's complaining about. Men don't understand boobs.
Not at all.
It's not that they don't understand boobs; is they don't care. They're just like, I want boobs to look big, and if they don't look big, I'm mad or something. It's woke.
The thing I understand about boobs is that they're awesome.
I concur.
Right, that's all you need to know, really.
That's that. Like, Big, that small, is, doesn't that, matter. Just they're
that
all
that information
awesome.
Has served me well in my life. So
it's good information to have.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. No, but that it's aside, wonderful. Yeah. I didn't have much to complain about, and I'm really looking forward to the third game coming out, which I hope, because, you know, I hope it's a little quicker than this last one, but, you know, that's somebody who beat the game in 2 weeks complaint. That's, you know, for the folks who take 10 years to beat it, like I usually take to beat most games, like, you know, Dragon Quest XI, which I just beat last month. You know, that's not really a valid complaint.
You know, like we have to have the PS5 Pro enhanced version of the game, and then the PS6 re-release of the game with DLC, and then we can get part 3 on the PS7, I think.
That's partly why I didn't buy the deluxe version, aside from the ridiculous cost of it. It's the fact that I went and got the deluxe version of PS4, and they're like, well, not anymore, because now there's a PS5 version of the first one. And they're probably going, like you said, they're probably going to do it again, get that extra cut. Because yeah. Square going to Square, or rather modern day games are going to do that thing. So you happy, you happy, Aki? I'm talking.
We'll say yes. Sure.
You better be happy, Aki.
Hey, I don't have to talk.
If so, he stops talking, that's the end of this show. We have no more content.
It's like Speed, Purnell edition.
I mean, you tell me that's the end of the show.
Yeah, Purnell drops below 50 words a minute.
Gonna, like, be bad. I'm like, oh, so we need to stop Purnell talking so we can finish this quickly, is what you're telling me.
No, I think he's saying
that
the
means
opposite.
The end of the show.
There's no show.
So no reviews. Awesome. Let's do this.
Which means you don't get any more games.
So what you're saying is I get alone in the dark. So yeah, please get it now. So she doesn't want it. She just confirmed that shit. Give it to me. I'll talk about it.
We haven't heard anything.
Heard anything on that. There
so
are
I was for it.
A number of games that I have tried to get lately that I have not heard back on. I think a lot of people have new PR companies lately, and now, like, all of us content creators have to figure out who the fuck we need to get in touch with again.
Makes me wonder, is there like a sort of, is there a lot of turnover there or something? Or is it just people that are moving on to like get promotions or something, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know if it's like new PR people, if it's like changing agencies. It just seems like there's a lot more changeover in the past few weeks. And I don't know. I don't want to speculate why, but maybe it's all healthy reasons and it's just people moving up in the world and fun stuff like that's that. Possible. I don't know.
Hmm.
Hey, Coltrane, how are you? Aki, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good. It was a blur of playing one of my review games that I'm talking about today, and that was basically all I did for like 10 to 14 hours a day every single day.
Did you like it that much, or was it that big, or what was going on?
It was that big. And technically I would probably be done with it, but we'll talk about that later. And then today I got some Easter candy in and I ate the hell out of it. And I'm doing good. I'm happy.
Nice.
I got a sugar rush right now. I'm feeling pretty good.
That was like 72 words.
Yep.
Are you guys going to count each other's reviews tonight?
Yeah. Please. And I built a gunpla. So, awesome.
Oh, see, look, you have more to talk about. It's just talk with Aki.
So many words with this one. Jesus Christ.
There's a reason I don't talk too much about gunpla on here, because no.
So many damn words. What are you doing over there? Talking with your words?
Mm-hmm.
For shame.
My weekend kind of sucked. I didn't do anything for my birthday. Like, we went out the day before for our anniversary. We went to Outback, which is always fun. I can't eat the way I used to. I can't put a steak away anymore.
I'm sorry to break it to you, but that's getting old, buddy. Even when you're in good shape, you're eating much.
I need my meats. I need my
We all do, but the best steaks. Part about that is now the steak can be used for multiple meals. You don't have to eat the whole thing. You can have two meals out of it. That's efficiency.
I think we still have our Outback fries in the fridge.
See, how are there any of those left? That would have been the first thing I would have fucking eaten.
He just answered you.
Because I wanted to focus on the steak. Like, I want to make sure that I eat Homer, the steak.
No, Homer, don't fill up on fries.
Yeah.
But the fries are so much better.
The fries are amazing. Like, oh, if you've never been to Outback and had their Outback fries, they are delicious. Seasoned fries, layered with cheese, and
significantly better than the steak.
So the Outback Nom House.
As a Texan, I'm not allowed to go to Outback Steakhouse. No. It's like 10th on the list of like steakhouses you can go to.
There?
They do. They actually do. It's weird.
It's like they're trying to be chased out of town by now.
It's just one of those things. I mean, we have In-N-Out Burger here now. It's like kind of like we have a little bit of everything because. I mean, Texas has like 4 of the top 10 largest cities in the U.S. in it. Like, it's just too big of a state. So we do have like a little bit of everything except for like, Tim Hortons or Wegmans or whatever. like those regional grocery stores you always hear about. Huh?
We need to split Texas into Texas, Nexus, and Westus.
I like it. Yeah. I've always thought that Texas should be more states, except that would mean we have more red states.
It actually blows my mind, the idea that I feel like it's like Texas and California, they are states where many, many, many of its residents could die having never left.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I know someone might be hearing this and going, well, that could be any state. Yeah, but I mean, driven like you lived in another state and still having never left the state.
It's any state. Texas is one of those places where you can live in multiple places without leaving the state, you know?
Yeah.
You'll be like, well, I started in Dallas, and then I moved to El Paso, and then I went down to Austin, and further down to San Antonio when Austin got too expensive, moved over to Houston, and back up to Fort Worth.
And from what I've heard, the larger regions of Texas, they are very different. They feel like different states just going to them.
Yeah, yeah, they do. It's like different topography and everything. And in West Texas is like all windmills, which is weird. Anyway, happy birthday, Joe.
Thanks. The sad thing is that's more than I got from my mom this year. She forgot. Forgot.
I forgot my mom's birthday. Called me today.
She was like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I forgot my mom's birthday once because it's like, somewhere around July. And it's like nothing happens around that time. And so it's easy to forget.
I always get my mom and my dad mixed up. Because it's my dad and then my mom, like, day after day. And I can't remember if it's 24th, 25th, or 25th, 26th.
Yeah, my...
getting older, forgetting birthdays.
Yeah.
My dad's was easy. It was August 31st, so just last day of August. Easy. And it's like, it was
really simple, because hers is the beginning of winter, my favorite season. So... it's just everyone else in my family's is a lot harder because we have three different anniversaries in May, three or four different birthdays in May, and it's basically me and every guy in the family. It's like I have trouble even remembering my own birthday at this point because there's just so much shit happening in May. It's terrible.
I have to honestly stop and think and count what year it is. Compared to 1981 and do the math in my head, it's like, oh, I'm 40, 41.
I can't do
43.
That. I always just say I'm around and list whatever seems right.
I'm about 40 something ish, maybe.
Yeah. Usually I go with I'm 10? Around 35 ish. So I'm somewhere around there.
You just do it in blocks of 10.
That's another. That was another way in which my dad was like super easy to figure out because he was born in 1950.
So
perfect. Just take whatever year, subtract 50.
Oh, boom. That's awesome.
Everyone sharing birthdays in chat. I'm gonna hack all your passwords later. I now know all your parents' birthdays.
You also need their socials.
I mean,
share your socials, kid.
We get mad at Facebook for not showing us other people's birthdays.
Yeah, I think more Facebook.
Like, that's most the only way I remember birthdays anymore is Facebook. That's the only way I could keep any birthdays in mind.
That's how most people remember them now, because Facebook took all the work out of it. So why bother otherwise? Like, you might remember birthdays you interact with.
I don't have a Facebook. If I friend somebody, I just wait for it to come around.
So Aki goes, I don't even have a Facebook. Then the question then becomes, how many birthdays do you remember?
All of them.
How many is all of them?
My grandparents, my cousins, mine, and my uncle, which is
Former high school people and, you know.
I don't even know any of their names. I don't give a fuck about any of those people.
Just like I talked to you guys on the show and the people I just said whose birthday is that no one. I locked that shit
down.
What
about your podcast co-hosts?
Don't care.
I don't give a shit about y'all.
Like, wow. You have to remember, all the people that I know keep telling me they believe I'm autistic because I don't care about other people all that much.
That's sociopathy, not autistic.
Huh?
I said that's sociopathy, not like being autistic.
Well, there's some of that too, I'm sure. But no, I don't. People in high school, I don't care about any of them. None of them directly affect me at this point. So as far as I'm concerned, they don't exist.
I mean, I'm not going to knock it. I'm not that concerned about high school friends either, but I have a lot of friends and associates I've made over the years after high school. And I don't necessarily remember birthdays, I'm not saying you do. I'm saying I do. And through those, I'm like, well, I mean, I'm not going to break my neck to remember birthdays, but if I have an app that's like, yo, his birthday's today, I'm going to go, happy birthday, Joe. And that'll be good, you know? Because even if it's an app that I came across this a few years back where the question became, well, you don't even remember my birthday. You only knew it because Facebook told you. I'm like, well, yes, but guess
what? You're goddamn right, that's good, it.
But I bet you still feel good when people say happy birthday, because if they don't, you'll wonder why they forgot about you despite having an app tell them about it. And that's the truth.
It's a very damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing.
Yep. So just... Yeah. Someone's going to say happy birthday, own it, and move on.
I've never been concerned if people remember my birthday or not, unless it's my parents. If they forgot, I'd be pissed.
You literally just told us why. You don't talk to people. Like, no one's going to tell you but those people, so you've covered the basis. Hmm? But if you didn't, you'd be like, why is it nobody remember my birthday? Because then you would have more people that could forget your birthday.
I don't care if my grandparents forget it or if any of my cousins or anything. I don't care if any of them forget it. It's just my parents. If my parents forgot, I'd be upset, and that's it. That's the only group I care about.
And Joe was saying his mom forgot his birthday, so you can relate to that.
Yeah, that sucks.
See, she has a little empathy in there. We had to dig it out with a shovel, a lubed up shovel.
I've forgotten birthdays too, so I can't, you know, those and glass houses shouldn't throw stones, shit like that.
Yeah, but your mom should know when she pushed you out.
Well, she saw me on Sunday, and because that's when
she wished you a happy birthday. Then at least
she didn't, but she wished us a happy anniversary because my anniversary is on the 16th. My birthday is on the 18th.
Oh,
like a 1-2 punch right there. And okay, so she saw us on the 17th in between days.
Fair enough, then. I can't complain about that, then. That's May. All right, I get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got games to talk about. Should we dive into some games tonight?
No.
Just like, I'm going to dive into the biddies that Dementia just dropped. 6 biddies. Thank you for the biddies raining down into the cup. Should have called that out earlier, but I'm getting forgetful in my old age.
But yeah, I'm serious. I'm not, because I don't have any games to review right now. That's on purpose. And so I'm going to leave.
You're going to head out?
Well, it was a pleasure.
Yeah. I'll listen to some review and then quietly, you know, make my exit.
Well, since we won't know when you exit, it was good having you around the chat for a bit.
Thank you. Yeah, it was nice to be here. And like I said, happy birthday, Joe. And thanks, everybody, for continuing to support and listen to the SML podcast. And I will have a review for you next week.
Oh, will you have a review next week?
Boy, will I ever.
You never know. Hey, this could be the turnaround.
Am I going to be jealous?
This could be the one. We don't know yet.
It could be a good one. It could.
Could.
Oh, man.
We don't want to spoil it. We'll just give a tease. Gilson.
Yeah. The tease is that we're expecting it to be bad from the start.
Tease is just Gilson. Let it flow.
That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping for his redemption arc. I'm just waiting for it. So
a little bit of a pawn tease.
But all right, Chris, you head out. We are going to get to reviews. Aki, Purnell, you two ready for these?
Let's do a dance. Sure. And get down tonight.
First game to talk about tonight is Outcast, A New Beginning, developed by Appeal Studios, published by THQ Nordic, released March 15th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $69.99. 20 years after the award-winning action-adventure hit Outcast, the long-awaited sequel sees Cutter Slade return to the spectacular alien world of Adelpha. Resurrected by the almighty Yods, he's returned to find the Talons enslaved, the world stripped of its natural resources. His own past intertwining with the invading robot forces. It's up to him to go on a mission to save the planet again. Aki, what is going on in Outcast, A New Beginning?
Okay, in this you play as Slade, Cutter Slade, an ex-Navy SEAL, an all-around American hero, blah, blah, blah. And you are not a spry chicken, but you're still in good shape, and you suddenly just appear on this planet through a randomized portal event, and you don't remember jack shit. You don't know why you're there. You don't know where there is. You're just like, oh, okay, I'm here on a mission. What's my mission again? Fuck. And from there, you start helping the locals, because they are basically tribal people with a little bit of magic, not a lot of bit of magic, just a little itty bitty bit, against flying ships that have fucking cannons. So they might be slightly, ever so very slightly, out fucking classed. So you decide, well, I'm going to help these people, because I have no weapons, and they have spears. So that's something, I guess. And yeah, you start going after these technologically advanced invaders, and kicking the shit out of them pretty soundly with a whole bunch of gear that you find there that just happens to perfectly fit you as though it was made for a human being. This game is a big old open world. It's a third person shooter, and you can go around. One of the first things you get is this fucking amazing jetpack thingy that is one of the most bits of fun I've had in a game in a good long while, honestly. You do have to upgrade it throughout the game. There's a whole bunch of different upgrades you can get. Some of them are free for your character. One whole set of upgrades is just for your jetpack, basically. Another one is for combat stuff, so like your shield and things like that. And both of them require different upgrade materials, basically. But the more you upgrade your jetpack, the more fun that bitch is, and it's pretty fun straight from the get-go. But once you have that thing fully upgraded, you can jump into the air like 5 times, and then you can glide. And if you don't jump all those times, when you glide, you can boost, and oh my god, it's so fun. And then you don't have to swim either. There is swimming mechanics. You can swim in this game. You don't have to. Fuck swimming. Swimming's pointless. You can use your jetpack. It's so fun. Oh my god, I love it. Legitimately.
Traversal in this game is really, really good. They nailed the jetpack mechanics. It's really fun to get around. I find myself, like, I'll see, like, oh, well, I can go to this objective over here. The road takes me down around this way and up over here. Or I could just jetpack over this mountain in front of me and see what the hell happens.
Yep, that's
exactly. So you're just jumping up walls and flying up these all air, like, there's shit hidden in weird areas in this game. It's cool.
Yes. Matter of fact, you even get another mode of transport that's even faster than the jetpack. I still prefer the jetpack because they nailed it so perfectly. I fucking love it. I've never seen a game that has traversal that's as fun as this game has been. So this game is built to be nonlinear. So you have a few things you have to do at the very beginning that's in order, but after that, you can go anywhere on this landmass, basically. And there's a few really large villages. Each one of them require you to do certain things in order to get the village to where it's combat ready, more or less, and to where they trust you. And you can do them in any order. There is a slight problem with that concept, because there's a lot of cutscenes in this game, and a lot of them are based on you need to complete this objective and be in, then go to this location, but the game doesn't tell you to do any of that. So you don't know that there's a cutscene there. So you might complete, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 cutscenes worth of stuff, and then go to an area and then only catch one. And it might show you the rest of them, or it might just forget that there was a cutscene, which can feasibly cause problems. Namely, I can't beat the game because some of the options that you have to do in order to complete one of the missions just hasn't popped for the character that I have to talk to at all. And it might be because of the cutscene situation. That's the only thing I can think of. There is a lot to do in this game because basically you have to complete every side mission everyone has in order to make them all super happy to actually finish the game. So you are doing a lot in this game. I played it every day until last night, and if it hadn't have glitched, and they do know about this problem and they are trying to fix it because it's not something that happens to everyone. So they're working on it right now. They don't know how long it's going to take to patch, but they're working on it.
That's good.
If it weren't for the fact that would have glitched, I probably would have basically 100%ed the game last night. I spent like 5 to 7 hours trying to get it to let me finish the game, and nothing happened, sadly. Other than that, though, the game's been really good. There isn't a ton of weaponry in the game. You get 2 guns, a pistol, and a rifle, basically. However, this game has them being modular. You can use yet a different upgrade, set of upgrade items to unlock module slots on each gun. The pistol has 4 and the rifle has 7, 8, something like that. I don't know. And basically, with that, you can add parts onto the gun that you find strewn around the world, and they give you different things that they can do. Like, there might be one that does extra damage, extra headshot damage, might make you shoot faster, or it could just straight up turn it into a fucking machine gun, assault rifle, shotgun, might shoot 5 bullets at one time. Like, they can do all sorts of things, and you can mix and match them. So if you're like, oh, I have this thing that gives you smart bullets, so if you're aiming at an enemy, any bullet you shoot just curves and hits the fucker. Well, you know, I want to make my gun a shotgun. All of the shotgun bullets are going to hit it, no matter what. And maybe I want it to shoot 5 different sets of shotgun bullets all at once. You can make something that shreds fucking everything.
The weapon modular upgrade dealy thing is really open-ended for some crazy builds.
Yeah, it's really fun. There is a glitch related to that right now. There's an achievement for getting all 32 modules, and it won't pop. It's broken right now, which breaks an achievement for getting all achievements, which in and of itself is realistically probably also broken, because they always start off broken regardless. That's the only 2 achievements, I believe, that are broken in the game, so that's great. So yeah, there's 32 of those. There's 32 abilities. They really like the number 32 for some reason. And so you're just going around saving all these aliens and reconnecting them and getting them to become allies again while kicking the shit out of robots and their human owners, all to figure out what the hell's going on and to hopefully get back home, because obviously this is an alien planet and you want to go the fuck home. So yeah, it's really fun. I thoroughly enjoy this game. You have to kill not just robots, because there's a few variety of those. There's also the fucking animals on the planet itself that are all vicious little bastards that you have to put down when they decide to attack you too, which is really fun. It's just, there's so much here, and there are swaths of areas where there's nothing there, but then you'll see like a big old gigantic group of these like wild alien dog things that the moment you come within a certain distance, all of them just decide, oh, that thing, fuck that thing in particular, and the problem is you're that thing. And then it becomes a gigantic fight that is just really fun. Yeah,
something good with the game that I did want to bring up is the multiple difficulty levels. Like, if you want, you could put it on like story difficulty and max aim assist, and you basically just have to like look in the general direction of something and hold the trigger, and it'll shoot it until it's dead. It's very much, if you want to just enjoy the story and have minimal difficulties with the game in terms of combat and whatever else, this game, it'll be there to help you. It's not instant easy mode win without issues, because you are going to have to heal, you're going to have to maintain your health, you are going to have to pay attention to stuff, but it's a lot more accessible than a lot of games in the genre. Like,
yeah, I put everything to make it the easiest that I could possibly do just to speed through it, and I've died a few times, and I'm good at games like this, and I've still died a few times. So yeah, this game isn't just fucking piss take. It is not a walk in the park. It's a little difficult, not super hard, even on easy, but it is a little difficult. You do have to pay attention. Like Joe said, you will be healing, because if you don't heal, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning stages of the game, when you have like all the upgrades for your character and your jetpack and stuff, not as much of a concern. You still want to do it though.
Yeah.
Because they eat through your health something fucking fierce, and it doesn't give you any noises or anything as a warning for when your health is nearly complete depleted. So you got to pay some attention. And this has like five different difficulties on top of having lots of accessibility options, which were super great. I've thoroughly enjoyed every aspect of this game. Basically, it has some fantastically corny one-liners and shit in it, like,
oh, it's so cheesy that the hero is such a cheese ball. It's good stuff. The game clocks in, it is a $70 game. I think it's one of the few $70 titles from THQ Nordic. What are your thoughts on that?
I think right now it's really hard to say yes, let's go for that, because there's still a lot of problems with story progression and stuff because of the way they built the game. It, with how cutscenes are required to go through and stuff, you can kind of get fucky wucky because of that. But after they get this patch out that hopefully fixes that completely, then it 100% would suggest this. It's fantastic even for that amount of money. It is such a fun game. And just the further the cheesy part of this, you would be like, oh, it's cheesy, it probably isn't very good. The voice acting is phenomenal. All of the characters are really well done, and they're cheesy like those old 80s action movies, cheesy bullshit. And it is, I love it.
It's enjoyable. It really is. I'm having a lot of fun with this one.
I've laughed out loud literally a number of times during this. It's really good, and the action, just shooting, feels really nice too,
because there is, and if the SML podcast knows anything, it's how to make people laugh.
Yeah,
let's be fair. Next game, Violet Wisteria, developed by Kenepro Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. Released March 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Become a magical sword-wielding heroine and take on the forces of evil across time, space, and alternate dimensions. Purnell, what is going on in Violet Wisteria?
So, I don't know what was going on in the head of the developer, but if I were to take a guess, it would be that they had a love of games such as Valus, which was originally on, I want to say it was on PC at one point, but I played it on the TurboGrafx CD. It definitely feel like they took that and said, hey, I want to make a game that feels like that, but with my own little bit of a twist slash spin, which led us to Violet Wisteria. You play as a princess or a queen. I'm not going to lie to you. This narrative didn't really click for me like that. I was more interested in how the gameplay performed, but all I know is they have like narrative sequences between levels, and then you engage in the stages. The gameplay is where the action is, so here we go. It is a 2D platformer, not a Metroidvania for anybody who might be somehow getting that impression, and you are basically controlling this individual. As you progress through the level, there are enemies that will show up that come in one of three different colors, blue, white, and red. And they attack in their own whatever way, just like any normal enemies do. Your main character, on the other hand, also has three
real quick attacks. The store page, Violet Wisteria, is a side-scrolling action platformer with a unique tricolor attack system.
Well, there you go. I thought you were about to say Metroidvania. I was like, what the freaking hell? No. You had me scared for a second. Don't
dating sim or K-pop.
K-pop, McGillicuddy, MacGuffin game.
Pickleball. Yeah.
With roguelike elements.
Yes.
Just to cap it off. So the enemies come in three colors, and your attacks also come in three colors. They somewhat perform a little differently. One's an upward slash, one's a downward slash, and one is like a thrust. But that's not what makes them specifically special. What it actually is the fact that those attacks are also associated with colors as well. And there is a rock, paper, scissors-esque mechanic at play here where you have to use the right colored attack to defeat the right colored enemy. An enemy might be, white. A white enemy is defeated by the blue attack. So you have to press the attack button that corresponds with that to kill them. If you choose the attack button that is... There's three different attacks in that regard. One of them, if you hit the right color, you'll kill them. There's another one where you'll just kind of whiff. But if you hit the same color as the enemy, rather than kill the enemy, you'll repel off of it. And this is what I both like and hate about this game at the same time, is the fact that they use this to great effect to influence the platforming action of the game as well. So there might be a section where you're kind of running through, just kind of getting your mojo going, you're hacking and you're slashing and you're killing dudes. And then one day, at one point, you miss attack and you hit the guy with the same color attack. You rebound off of him and you dump into a pit and you die, and it costs you a life. But the best part of it is that there might be times where you need to repel off of an enemy in order to cross a chasm or to ascend upwards into a vertical scrolling section of the stage. So there's a lot to take into consideration there, and a lot of people's minds may not really gravitate well towards maintaining the idea that here's the color, kill him with this color. But fortunately, they did integrate a sort of color key cheat where you can flip the option and it'll show you the color of the attack that will kill the enemy above their head in a little sword icon. So rather than have to do the math in your head every time you see an enemy, all you got to know is this is the attack that kills them and this is the color, this is the attack that will repel me off of them. And you see both of them in a very decent impression on the screen. So you get used to that, you'll be able to make progress in the game. Not to say you won't die, because you'll still die a few times. Trust me on that. And if you decide not to use that color key system, early on in the game, enemies will just be hard colored. Like, here's a floating yellow monster or white monster, so you know what to do. Or here's a blue one. But then later on, they start kind of mixing it up a bit. Like, you might fight a worm who's actually yellow, but his innards are the color that matters. And you have to spot that as you're running up on them. And if you might be thinking to yourself, well, no, Biggie, I'll just memorize the layout of every enemy, that typical muscle memory thing. Well, that won't work because the game is designed to randomize the color of the enemies every time you play. So you have to be paying attention no matter what. There's no skimping on it. And I'm honestly okay with that. I prefer that because rather than let people just kind of gimp the systems, like, no, this system's here for a reason. You need to be conscious of it. And if you don't want to be conscious of it, well, then play a different game. But, that's what makes this game stand out as opposed to just being a Valus clone, which I can respect. Because if it didn't have this color scheme, it would pretty much be a Valus clone. So I will also say that even though I said, like, I don't remember a ton about the narrative or anything like that, I will tell you that the graphic style of the narrative is pretty awesome. It reminds me of PC 98 games, classic PC games, and of course, classic Turbo CD games, because those games were kind of modeled after those games too. So I like the visuals of that. I like the music, and I like the graphics, believe it or not. The whole
thing. You know what I like? I like subs. You're goddamn right. I like those subs. Jordan, 650. Thank you so much, Jordan, for coming in, dropping the sub for the fifth month. Always good having you here.
A sub without oil just ain't right.
Well, some form of dressing. You don't want a dry sandwich.
That is correct. It just seems nasty. But I also don't want wet bread. I need the perfect balance.
And it depends. Like, are you going with like a veggie sub? Are you going with a meat sub? You know, you could be going with a meatball sub. And then
it's going to be a meat sub. It's going to be a meat sub. There's no sub that's not meat for me. I can do vegetarian options, but subs ain't one of them. So in your face, I don't know, Subway vegetarian options. I don't know.
Suck it. Violet Wisteria, tell us more about this one.
So the funny thing about it is, like, there's not a lot more to say about it, because it's a classical style platformer. I will say the game is challenging. There are difficulties involved. I just set on the default normal or whatever difficulty. And what happens there is you get 4 hearts. You lose all those hearts. You lose a life. If you fall into a pit, you lose a life. You run out of lives. You have a total of 6 continues. And when they run out, that's it. Just like the old days, you got to start at the beginning of the game. Some people might call that too hard. I say, no, it's the style of the time. It's only 8 levels in the game or so. So I'm just throwing it out there because I can freaking beat it. But there's not a lot of stages. It's designed for you to have that. Can you beat it in one run if you can't practice and get better and eventually you'll have that run? That's how games used to maintain their longevity, where people were like, this game ain't worth the money. It's only 8 stages. Well, yeah. Because you got infinite continues. Yeah. If you got infinite continues, of course you're going to beat the game. That's why it's short. But if you have to get good at it and beat the game in a certain, with a, you know, limitation to it, that's what takes time. But then that goes against the whole got to beat the game for the next new fix rule that we've developed. So, yeah, there you go. But I think this game is pretty decent. I don't have any gripes with it. I will say, though, that if frustration is not your angle, you might find yourself a little, you know, perturbed by this title. But if you can handle a learning curve in regards to just reaction times, really, if anything, I'd say this game is worth your effort and your time, especially if you like classic 2D platformers, and doubly so if you liked Valis, even though the color thing doesn't make it play like that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the game clocks in at $15. Your official verdict is...
I give it a bona fide try, because, like I said, the color schema thing could put some people off. But if you're okay with the idea of a run-in slasher that requires a little bit of, you know, reactionary timing, and not just brute forcing, I think you'll find something to like here.
Cool beans. All right, next up, Valiant Hearts Coming Home and Valiant Hearts the Collection. Code provided to us for this coverage by Ubisoft. Is developed by Ubisoft. Holy shit, Raider Biz, thank you for coming in, dropping 300 biddies, making that cup go all explodey. Thank you so much for coming in here. Love having you hang out. Get your entries in for the giveaway that we're doing. I'll just start the intro over. Valiant Hearts Coming Home and Valiant Hearts the Collection. Developed and published by Ubisoft. Code provided to us for this coverage by Ubisoft. Released March 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $24.99 as a collection. Games are available for $14.99 each. Live the entire story of these Valiant Hearts through the entirety of World War I with the acclaimed Valiant Hearts The Great War and its sequel, Valiant Hearts Coming Home. Aki, The Great War is kind of an older game. Valiant Hearts Coming Home is the new game. I believe it was a Netflix game for a while.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And now it's on console. How is it?
It's pretty good. If you've played the original game, it's more of the same. It plays basically the same, and it controls basically the same, and all the characters look basically the same, and it's still basically the same story. This is a part 2 for a reason.
It does add some extra new stuff into it from the first game. The first game was more of a walk and click type style game where you'd move your character around on the screen, you'd click A to pick whatever up, and then you'd go use it. That is a lot of what this game is as well. But they've also added in a couple of small mini games that are chapters in and of themselves. Namely, there's one where you fly a plane and you try to avoid getting hit by birds, bullets, bombs, jackasses, you know, just everything. And then there's also, and this one I hate because I'm bad at it, but you'll love it. There's a music mini game that requires you to push A through Y on your controller in time in order to
pretty cool.
do well. Yeah, I'm terrible at it. I mean, God fucking awful at it.
Shocker.
Yeah, I know, right? And yeah, that's really the majority of the new stuff it's added. It touches on some of the people from the prior game, but it is also mostly new people still. So you end up controlling 5 different people, I believe, by the end of the game. I haven't quite finished it yet. I've gotten control over 4 of them so far. I believe 2 of them are returning people from the first game, a young nurse and one of the black soldiers. And in this one, you also get another black soldier who I believe is the younger brother of the one from the original game, as well as a new German guy to play as. I don't know who the last person is, though, so meh. My guess, probably either a white American or a Brit would be my guess.
Anna? Did you play as Anna?
Yes. Yes, you did. She's the nurse. Yeah.
I'm just going through, like, it says you play as James, George, Ernst, Anna,
and Freddy. And Freddy.
And you do play as Freddy? All right.
Yeah, he's the black soldier from the first game. He and Anna know each other.
Gotcha.
And James is Freddy's younger brother. Ernst is the German. And I've already forgotten the other person.
George.
I think that's a British pilot that you play as in the flying bit.
Yes.
I believe. So there you go. So I have played as him. I just forgot because it was for like 2 levels so far. one where you had to fix the plane and another where you flew it. They will appear again. But just don't know when. There's 3 acts to this game, I guess we'll call it. I think they call them chapters in this, with each section in each of them being called an episode, I believe. And the first 2 chapters each have 7 episodes apiece, and the last one has 5. It isn't a super long game unless you're really looking for all the collectibles. Every level has a handful of collectibles, 3 to, I think the most I've seen is 5. That you just walk around, you pick up. They're pretty obvious. They have a little blinking on them so you know, hey, come pick this the fuck up. Just like every other item that you can interact with in the game, they all flash a little, so it's not hard. It's just a matter of, oh, it's there and it is flashing, because sometimes that's not super noticeable. And when you pick it up, you get a little bit of information about it, which are usually, you know, historical information. Like one of the first things you can pick up in the very first level is what's it called? It's basically a card where the military has said you're drafted. And it just tells you about the difference between white people's version of it and black people's version of it. Back then, they would tear off a corner of it if it was a black soldier, so that you could tell what color they were, because segregation was still a thing back then. And this game does not hide from stuff like that. They're like, no, segregation was a thing, and they weren't always treated as well. It's just a fact. And yeah.
Does it handle the situation with care in the game?
I think it's done fine, but it's also not done super deep. So it's kind of hard to really fuck it up at that point because they're not going super deep into it. They just kind of touch on it like you always see.
It just exists.
Yeah, it's just a thing that exists. They're not really talking about it too much. Anytime they reference it is usually in little historical bits of information that you can read from collectibles, more or less, that just give you facts, basically.
Looking online, it looks to be like a 3-4 hour long game. How long was the first one? About the same?
I think it took me about 3.5 hours, I believe, to beat the first one.
Gotcha. So $15 on these. 15 each or the collection of both games for 25. What are your thoughts? Should people buy one? Should they buy both?
Get the collection. It's a little cheaper and they're decent games. They're really kind of heartfelt because, you know, you get to hear these characters basically write letters to each other and stuff. And that stuff's really well done. You get to see the horrors of war to an extent. Like you might see, you know, a ship get blown up, but then you see all the characters sinking. They're all implied to be dead, but they're like, they're not bleeding or ripped apart or anything. You can see people in a hospital and they might be missing limbs or stuff, but it's always covered up and things like that. So it doesn't hide the horrors of war, but it gives you a softer view of it, I guess we'll put it.
It's T-rated, so it's not graphic.
Yeah, this is something a kid could play, and I'm not entirely sure they'd fully understand, but I think they'd get the point for the most part. And it's very heartfelt, because like Freddy, he's like, yo, brother, don't follow me here. This place fucking sucks. basically is what he's saying in the very first letter. He's like, please don't follow me. I know you always followed me as we were growing up. Please don't follow me here. It's not good. And then obviously, you know, James is part of the war and writes back, sorry about that. I kind of maybe sort of followed you.
Oh, jeez.
And so you get those connections there, and it's really nice. And something I really like is that this isn't a bunch of propaganda, which lots of these games have a whole bunch in there. Instead, it's like James ends up becoming kind of friends with the German guy because he's not a soldier at the beginning. And eventually he does get conscripted into the German military. But until then, they were friends. And even at that point, they don't want to hurt each other, even though they're on opposite sides because they are friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was really nice to see that. I think it's a really sweet game. So, yeah, I totally think everyone should get this. I think they're really well made, and I hope they do another one sometime in the future.
Cool. Sounds good. In a horribly planned show lineup, the next game to talk about is In Celebration of Violence, developed and published by Dolores Entertainment, released March 15th on PS5 for $12.99, a fantasy action roguelike of exploration and murder. Live, kill, die, improve, live again. Purnell, what's going on in Celebration of Violence?
Wish I knew.
All right, $12.99, what's your verdict?
So the beginning of this game had this like narrative where he talks about, they go through a little bit of dialogue, but in the end, they pretty much say your goal is to go out and defeat violence, which is interesting because you're doing so by being very violent yourself. So I guess the best way to put this is that this game is not all that concerned about narrative so much as just giving you a gameplay loop to follow. And then you do. So I'll talk about that actual gameplay loop. I feel like I need to start actually taking notes about game plots or something. Even if it's like this game, I can still say give you the whole gist and say, even after my notes, I can still tell you there's no plot. But this game plays as a pixelized roguelike that I've actually heard people refer to as having Souls-like elements. I don't know what that is per se, but I guess the whole aspect of like slow, methodic combat with like a die and then retry element going on for it. But you, at the beginning of the game, you choose a character. Characters come in a variety of classes, though early on you can only be like the peasant. And each class has a set of base stats that they run with and a starting weapon that they can run with. When they have a weapon, you can use the L2 trigger or the R2 trigger to perform. It's not even light and heavy like in a normal sense. It's just two different attacks. And I guess primary, secondary. And what you'll be doing with those is running around the map, running around basically just murking people up. I love how I said that. I got to get this in check. But basically, you'll be starting out in a hub town. You'll be in a room where the game primes you with a basic description of the functions of attack you can do. Like the fact that you can do the two attacks I just mentioned. The fact that if you press R1, you will parry attacks by pushing your weapon into the enemy. And then if you connect with them at the right time, they will get dazed or stunned. And then you can use that time to, you know, initiate a counterattack. You can sprint by using L1. And if you can jump by pushing L1, which is like a flying leap forward or back or whatever direction you're pushing. And you can hold down X to just run around. All the things I just described use stamina, and you will run out of stamina often and quickly. So get ready for that until you spend a lot of time leveling up your character and, you know, beating those odds. After you've pretty much nailed down those general mechanics and you walk around the hub area a little bit, you will be tasked with coming across one of two mirrors. There may be more in the hub. I've only ever found two. But each of those mirrors will take you to a different location. And once you get there, I guess the game will truly begin. You will be in a field or desert or a cave or any number of locations. And your goal is to find the next mirror and to continue your progression. What is stopping you? Anything with a blood intent will try to kill you. Anything with an intent for murder. You'll come across wizards. You'll come across archers. You'll come across boars. You'll come across old people, trees. Everything seems to want to kill you in this game. And I guess that lines up with the concept of celebrating violence, because you'll be tackling these enemies head on. And the interesting thing about this game, too, is that it's not as simple as a lot of games where you're used to just seeing the enemy on the screen and you walk up on them. Enemies can be hiding in the bushes and the trees. And you might just be walking by and suddenly, boom, a shrub moves and a guy with a giant axe comes out and starts swinging at you. And then you are immediately tasked with combating them. The funny thing about this game is that at its core, combat's not exactly hard. Enemies have very reasonable tells that let you know when they're about to assault you. And you can use that opportunity to either get out of the way or parry. The issues that come from it, however, is one, the fact that more often than not, there will be a lot of enemies and very little of you. And in addition to that, the slow pacing of the combat might make it hard for you to pretty much time things. And until you build your stamina up, whether it be through leveling up at the end of a run, which I'll tell you about in a second, or spending experience points at a shrine that will increase your speed, but only during that run and only if you find that shrine, you will find yourself dealing with this slow pacing and your very quickly dwindling stamina, where if you get your stamina below a certain point and try to parry or guard, you will get stunned yourself and leave you wide open to attack. Defeating enemies will give you experience points in the form of purple cubes. Those purple cubes also double as the in-game currency. So if you come across a shop or what I can only describe as crystallized objects, you can use those experience crystals, if you have the right amount, that is, to access new items, whether from the shop or from these crystallized items. Sometimes, while you're running around, you can also destroy objects such as trees or rocks and get those items as a means to construct, you know, objects in the event that you find the opportunity to do so, such as at a blacksmith in the main hub area. An interesting thing about this, though, is that every weapon, and for that matter, I guess character too, has a certain power level for the strikes that the weapon swings. And if your power level is at not high enough, you won't be able to cut down trees or smash rocks. Unlocking the blacksmith class was the first opportunity I had where I was able to pretty much destroy everything I wanted, and it was wonderful to do that. But before that, I found myself hitting rocks sometimes and getting that weird, like, shaky stun feel because I don't have enough oomph in my attack to knock it down. So one thing about this game now is that you're going to eventually die. It's inevitable. Violence wins. Yeah, I know. It's shocking, right? And when that happens, the game will... I haven't quite cracked what it is doing, and I'll talk about what I feel about that on the back end of this review. But at the end of a life, the game will total up the amount of violence you committed. I guess it's like something like 52% violence achieved is what it'll say, for example. It'll show a bunch of red bodies, pretty much displaying the number of people you killed. And then it'll give you a certain amount of the experience you accumulated, which will allow you to carry over to your next life. At this point, you'll be able to select a new class. Preferably more classes will be available because you may have unlocked some on your previous run. And then you can spend that experience on a number of different stat buffs. Such as, let me see here, speed and strength, aggression, dexterity, all the usual bits, though, at least here, they kind of give you a decent example or explanation of what these things do. Because unlike this screen, this game does a really good job about telling you nothing. I mean, nothing. You will be fumbling and stumbling and trying to figure out everything. It does the Sheer and the Wanderer roguelike style aspect where you might come across a potion. The potion has question marks on it. Using the potion item could either heal you, you could end up throwing it and setting the space on fire, you could end up poisoning yourself, it could explode in your hand, all kinds of stuff potions can do in this game. And coming back to the game, it still won't tell you what it is on a new run. So, but on the positive, while you're in the middle of a run, if you happen to use a potion and survive it, the next time you pick up that color potion, it will tell you what it does. So at least they give you that. However, once you decide to run further, you might come across accessories or items that you can equip too. Like, well, not so much equip, the game will just give them to you. But you'll get these items that will go onto your character and allow you to do different things. You know, typical accessories that a lot of these games have. However, the problem is, if you get one of these items, the character display will just give you a generic, cryptic description about it, but it doesn't tell you what the item actually does. In order to see what the item actually does, you need to go to the notes section of your the pause screen tab and look it up in the equipment or items menu or mementos, and it will tell you what all those little knick-knack items do once you found them. So you might be saying, well, they do tell you what they do, Parnell's, on this notes tab. And I'm like, yeah, but you have to navigate to the notes tab and scroll all the way down till you find the item you found to learn what it actually does on that screen. You should be able to see it on the character tab when you hover over the item. Underneath the wacky description they give you, tell me what the thing actually does. Help me do better with my runs. I get the idea of wanting players to discover things on their own, but to an extent, I feel like something like that should be in the character listing at all times. I will say, though, the weird thing about this is that I don't think the game is bad. I genuinely don't. I find the game enjoyable with its own charms once you adapt to the aspect of how slow it is and how methodical it is. And you do start to slowly see progression in your character as you level up. And as you discover new things here and there, such as like what spells this character starts with, or what weapon this character starts with, or you start seeing, quests get checked off the quest board in the hub area, you start to feel like you're making a bit more progress and that things are happening. But this game is not for everybody because, again, it's extremely cryptic. It doesn't tell you a lot about what's going on, and you'll be discovering it for yourself. But there's something fun to be said about the discovery process as well, if you're okay with that sort of thing. And personally, I feel like I am. In a world where this genre is a dime a dozen, it definitely might not be for everybody. But I can see myself playing this a little bit more before I move on to the next title. And I was going to say, the last thing I was going to say is that, and oddly enough, you might not be thinking it, but I actually do appreciate the graphical style of this title, too. I like the little blocky people.
All right. Well, the game clocks in at $13 on PS5. What do you think of it?
I'm going to also give this one a try. This is not a deny it title because I do feel like it has quality merits in the roguelike genre and a little few elements that it kind of brings to its own table. Nothing screams a little bit of fun like actually throwing a potion into a tree, setting it on fire, and then burning up, the equivalent of like 60 square kilometers of forest land by accident, or chopping down a tree and having it land on an enemy and killing them.
Oh, sounds like you enjoyed this one.
That's what I'm saying. I definitely did enjoy it, but it comes with caveats such as, it tells you nothing and it's very slow.
Yeah, more games need to have that direction to them, that just like open sandbox, do what you want. I know they just released a demo for that game Sandland. It's coming out later this year, and apparently the demo just drops you into the world, and it's just do what you want.
Like almost like a sandbox in a sand. Yeah. I'm guessing they don't intend for that, but I want it to be that. Yeah, I do. I mean, honestly, let's be honest. It's going to sell a lot of copies just because it was like Akira Toriyama's work. So
yeah,
I think that's going to move by that alone.
I'm interested. I'm probably going to be one of those
people moving it. You and me both, sir.
Anyway, we got one final game to discuss tonight, and it is a preview of Which Way Up Space Olympics, developed and published by Turtle Flip Studio. It's releasing Q1 25 on Steam for a planned price of $14.99. Perform graceful gravity gymnastics, outrun the relentless pull of a black hole, and launch your friends into space as you compete across multiple events in the Space Olympics. Pernell, what is going on in Which Way Up Space Olympics?
It is 2D platforming Mario Party-esque antics.
And actually, honestly, quick correction. The game is Which Way Up Galaxy Games. So it looks like it has undergone a name change since I first got the info on the game.
Well, I can tell you my icon still says Space Olympics, so there you go. Oh, no, they changed it. Okay, then.
I'm guessing the use of the term Olympics is what caused issues. So, Which Way Up Galaxy Games is what we're discussing.
Well, fortunately, the game itself didn't change, even if the name of the game did. Because going back to what I was saying before, this is a 2D platforming title that involves a series of Mario Party-esque mini-games that you'll be competing in with your friends. And fortunately, I'm assuming that they're going to maintain this in the final version of it, too. If not, they can correct me. But you can play this game with one copy of the game. I was able to play this game by using the copy that was gifted to me by the studio and inviting Joe into said game as a streamable version of it. I was able to stream the game to him, and he was able to join in and play it with me on my Steam Deck.
Yeah, the cool thing is that's just a feature of Steam. You can just do that on anything.
Oh, my God. Well,
yeah.
Well, I guess you just unlocked a new feature for me on this damn
thing. Yeah, isn't that fucking awesome? That's why when Grant reviewed Contra, he wanted it on Steam so he could do the remote play with his brother.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I regret buying Contra on the PS5 recently, but I had the credit there, which is why otherwise, shoot, I would have done that. But back to the Galaxy Games. I kept wanting to say Space Olympics. So on the beginning of this, with this preview version, there were 6 events that were accessible to us to play. I'm not going to get the name. I'm just going to talk about the ones I primarily enjoyed and just aspects of those games. At the beginning of this title, you are set to choose one of the characters in the game that portrays your avatar. My favorite was Maggie, the magnet-headed child thing. There's actually a spoon stuck to the magnet, which I thought was extra endearing. And I want to say, though, that even though Maggie was my favorite character, I feel that all of the characters that they make available to you are actually fairly charming. I liked seeing all of them, especially when I was, going against Joe and his character of choice. Little sprout
characters of choice.
Oh, yeah, you'll bring that up at the back end. but once that was established, you are able to go in and select which mini games you want to exist within your space galaxy game. Darn it. Galaxy game run. Some of my favorites were, there was one that was basically like called Star Trip, where there's like a circle that is kind of moving around the map, and you have to stay within the circle and maintain the most time in it by yourself, more than any other player before the timer runs up, and whoever maintained their time in there more than other players wins the game. Think of it as like King of the Hill with a mobile orb. Now, before I talk about any other games, I need to establish something that I totally forgot to state, which is a major feature of this game, and that is the gravity mechanics that come into play. Every structure that exists on a map has its own orbit. And if you were to, say, jump off of one planet towards another, you might find yourself orbiting that planet a little bit before gravity catches up to you and it pulls you down onto the surface. You can run all the way around an actual structure. If you throw objects, that is also affected by gravity, which is pretty cool and also a little frustrating depending on where you're coming at it from on some of the mini games that require you to throw objects. And there's also a feature that has existed in most of the mini games referred to as the comet push. This allows you to push objects away from you, whether a quick push or you can hold it down to charge it and do a powerful push. This applies to both objects and your opponents, which is where my favorite Event Horizon comes into play. And this one, you are running from a black hole. The black hole's on the left side of the screen, and everyone else is on the right side of the screen. Unless there's a feature that lets you switch it up and change it, everyone gets 2 lives, and you're just trying to outrun the black hole longer than anyone else. Now, when I was playing this with Joe, I realized very quickly that I could use the comet push to get ahead of him and then push him back as he's trying to jump to the island that I'm standing on and throw him into the black hole. Or even out of orbit, which will also count as losing a life if you pull that off.
I like to call it that the Parnell's a dickhead maneuver.
it's the best maneuver, trademark, patent pending. Patent pending. But it was a lot of fun to play that one. One that was like, I wasn't quite grabbing it, but I feel like it could come on to me later. It was like a constellation collection where you're running around the orbits just picking up stars, and you have to have held them for 9 seconds for it to count as a point towards your score. Now, what I wasn't picking up on, because it was just kind of happening as it was going, is that I'm not sure if the object stays on the screen for 9 seconds and it can be stolen, and then that point it has to start up for 9 seconds. But what I mainly noticed was that I was running over stars, they would eventually disappear, and then new ones would appear. So I just assumed I was running around collecting as many stars as I could. If I saw a star that was a color that didn't look familiar, I ran over it too, thinking I was stealing it. But it didn't have the amount of depth that I was hoping it would, even though it's meant to be a simple mini game. I was like, oh, it'd be nice if I could, you know, collect the stars and stay away from other people, and maybe they had to hit me to knock the stars out of me or something. I don't know.
I think that's a game that shines with four players because you're always trying to steal each other's stars. Where with us, it was you just collecting stars and me trying to figure out which character I was.
It's a gotcha. There was another one I remember where there were like meteors floating around in space, and we each had our own individual goals, and we were trying to use the comet push the meteors into our respective goals. I didn't mind that one either. That's, I thought it was pretty one. Fun. And if you, it's a tough one for sure. But I also can picture it as being a game where if you get your bearings, you will be able to play defense or offense. Doubly so if, in their final version, mind you, they make it so that you can have teams. Let's say, for example, certain mini
game based around that mini game.
Absolutely. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there already kind of is. Like, you think about games like Video Ball, and this game is pretty much not Video Ball to the letter, obviously, but it has that similar vibe, like, you know, just the general get the ball into the orb. You might be in teams, you might be solo, but with the gravity mechanic, I think that makes this one extra special. But if they are to incorporate a team mechanic, assuming they don't already have it in there, I think that would make mini games like this one particularly shine, because I would like the idea of someone playing offense and someone playing defense for a team and seeing who could do the best with that. Yeah. But as it is, it's still fun as well. Those are the mini games that most stuck out to me. I wasn't too big on the one where you had to throw the bomb at the meteor, but again, that might be one that shines better in four players. But with that one, you would run around, you would pick up bombs, you would throw them at a meteor. There's like actual asteroids that you can run on, of course, that have the player's icons on them, and you're trying to blow them up. But from what I could tell, again, unless I'm wrong, which is possible, I didn't notice the ability to pick up a bomb that someone threw onto my asteroid. It just kind of felt like if it was there, it was set to blow, and I couldn't stop it. But if that is the case and I can stop it, please let us know, and I'd be happy with that. But I just didn't notice it.
Well, let's talk about what kind of feedback we could provide to them for this. The game is still about a year out from release. We're getting an early look at this. They have a demo that you could check out on the Steam page if you want to go wishlist it. What kind of feedback would you give to them so far?
Well, definitely the team-based mechanics. I think that would shine for a lot of these minigames, if not all of them. Two, if they don't already have it implemented, like I said, the ability to pick up bombs and remove them. The ability to toggle on and off stage hazards, something that can spice up the minigames in their own right to not make them just rote for every respective time. Not saying they have to be a mandatory thing, but just be able to turn them off and on. I think that'd be pretty funny or just enjoyable to add a little bit of chaos to your spice. Be quite frank, aside from those things, and I can't think of anything else. I might say something like more games, but there's a lot more games that were already on the display list that you can't select because they're not ready yet. So there's going to be a lot more mini games. So I can't say that.
I think a single player mode or bots is something that could be really helpful in the game, so that people who don't have friends can still play with other people.
That's a good point. I think that would be like pretty decent, though. Hopefully if they do that, I'd focus more on the single player than just the bots. Though obviously, I feel like bots would come part and parcel with a single player mode, because this game definitely was shining in the multiplayer. But with that said, sometimes having that narrative push or maybe the ability to unlock different things would drive you to want to do the single player for a game that's otherwise meant to be multi. Smash Brothers. So, I mean, in that regard, I think that would help. I agree with you. But, I mean, I genuinely did find this to be pretty fun. I like what they were doing with it. I was going to say the single player, I mean, the single purchase, you know, stream was a thing, but you said that's a Steam feature, so I can't even kudos it for that. But I could definitely
give a game kudos for taking advantage of that feature and embracing it. A lot of developers don't even realize it is a feature. So for them to be like, listen, we couldn't figure out online because it's really expensive and hard to do, but Steam figured it out for us. So make use of this feature. And not only does it work really well, but it cuts down on development costs.
Honestly, I still feel like there, I mean, it's still worth mentioning, but I genuinely feel like there might have been something going on that we don't notice because we did get it to work once. But then the next time we tried it, that's when this bug that you're about to talk about right now kicked in.
Yeah, we had a weird fucky wucky glitch, as Aki would say, the second time around.
Fucky wucky!
Where my controller would register as two.
Yep, so I was the one that was hosting the game. I brought Joe in. It brought him in under two controllers, player two and player three, and one button press worked for both controllers.
It was like I had two profiles assigned to one profile, and now we couldn't figure out how to fix that.
And I definitely tried things. Like I went into, there was the ability in the streaming to turn off and like deactivate and reactivate controllers. I tried doing that, but it would just reactivate the other controller whenever I did that. It makes me think it might have been something set up on your side just today that resulted in this thing thinking there were two controllers. But since you said yourself that you only had one controller hooked up, who the heck knows?
Something to be looked into, either some fuck up on our end or something on Steam's end or possibly some kind of incompatibility with the game somehow. Something that we at least had to mention because it was definitely an issue that we couldn't solve. I don't even know where to begin to solve an issue for a feature like that. But I mean, it was still fun. Still had a good time playing it with you.
I agree.
I'm excited to hear more about it. It's a year away, so there's plenty of time for them to work on it and improve it. Is this a game that people should wish list and keep an eye on the Steam store?
They absolutely should. And I guess one other thing I guess I can mention they could add to this game if they decide to is cosmetics. I want to give Maggie some shades.
Cat ears.
I don't know. I wonder how cat ears would work on that magnet. That would be weird. Like an ear cat ears
on the moon.
Polarity. Cat ears per polarity.
There you go. Anyway, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Music this episode, I don't know. I'm just going to play something. Whatever I played last episode, I'll play again just so I don't have to change the artist info.
Oh, here you go. Here's some music. Listen to it.
I think it's Tiberian Sons, which is good because Tiberian Sons is good. Yeah, that's handy. That's really handy. Aki, you've been quiet. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Everyone go buy Gunpla.
I like how I hear myself for like a brief second when you unmute.
Yeah, that's because I'm not wearing headphones today because I'm lazy.
You're the best around.
I'm going to buy a Gunpla town. Buy a Gunpla now. This is what I will, but I'm broke.
Yeah.
I think you're an asshole.
No, he doesn't.
And you'd be correct.
I take that back. I guess he's right. You're an asshole.